Welcome to the Currency.News podcast. It pays to be curious.
Hello, this is Thomas Hubert, senior correspondent with The Currency. Welcome to the podcast this week with two guests. We have Pete Witterburn, who is a veterinarian surgeon in Bray, in County Wicklow, and his practice is called Bray Vet. And we also have Mark Butler, who is the managing partner of HLB Ireland, the accountancy firm here in Dublin. And we're going to talk about a survey that HLB Ireland did among vet practices in Ireland, and also about what's happening in this industry, which has changed a lot in recent years. And maybe I'll go to you, Mark, first to explain a bit why there has been so many changes in the ownership, especially of vet practices.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Thomas. I think the ownership really started to change sort of the end of 2017 and into 18. And it followed really the model that was happening in the UK for the previous 10 years, where it was corporate entities, private equity money, which were buying a lot of veterinary practices. And you wouldn't know it from the outside, as in the practice still stays the same name, etc. But it's a corporate owner behind it who has bought the goodwill and bought the practice from the historic owners who would normally be sole trade vets.
And why did that change in 2017? When did that happen more in Ireland at that time?
Well, I think up to that, there was some confusion around whether vets and veterinary practices could incorporate. So it's a bit of a separate thing, as in whether vets could operate their businesses out of limited companies. And there was confusion around that, as in between the Veterinary Practice Act and the Code of Conduct. It's the VCI who regulate vets, and their Code of Conduct sits alongside the Veterinary Practice Act. And there was a contradiction in the Code of Conduct, really, which said that vets could not incorporate. And that changed at the end of 2017, because I think the VCI confirmed at that stage that they regulate the practice of veterinary medicine. So the actual work and the clinical work that vets and nurses do is what they regulate, rather than who owns a practice. And that change facilitated a lot of vets to incorporate their practices. Before that, there's no doubt some vets were incorporating their practices anyway, and they were incorporating parts of their business. So say they were leaving the clinical side, and what they were charging the customer or the client was being paid by them individually. But say if they were selling drugs or selling pet food, etc., that was through a company. So it was a little bit of a mess from an operational perspective. So that sort of opened the floodgate somewhat for vets to incorporate their own practices. And it also opened the door for the private equity or PLC veterinary businesses then to start buying practices in Ireland.
So, Pete, in your own experience as a vet, we've talked about this clarification from the regulators and the VCI, that's the Veterinary Council of Ireland, that they have said, okay, as Mark explained, we're only concerned with clinical regulation. You can do what you want with your corporate form. So what did you do in your own experience?
So our practice had been for many, many years sole trader. So we were a partnership there were two owners, and that's how it had been. And that's the traditional model for vets, that the vets who are, if you like, the leading vets in the business are the ones who traditionally have owned the business. And I bought into the practice from two older vets 30 years ago. That's always been the traditional model. So what happened for us was, around that time, about 4 or 5 years ago, we were getting advice in two areas. First of all, in succession. So we're both in our late 50s, early 60s, and we're having to look to the future as to what's going to happen with our practice. And one of the problems with the partnership is that it's kind of very much, there's not that many options that you have with it. Whereas if you have a limited company, then you can arguably set aside smaller amounts, like 5% or 10% or whatever, to a wider number of staff members, you know, perhaps vets, perhaps even senior staff veterinary nurses or whatever. So if you're a limited company, you have many more options when it comes to succession. So that was one of the reasons why we were looking at it. The other reason is that there are business tax, those kind of reasons when you're investing in capital and so on, that it can make more be more tax efficient to have a limited company as the foundation of your business. So those were kind of the two main reasons. We were advised that it was a sensible thing for us to do.
Okay, so we've seen this trend and we have examples like Pete, you're remaining the owner with your partner of your practice, but in a corporate form. Then we have, as Mark started to explain, the outside investors coming in, like we've covered in the currency, CVS, IVC Evidentia, and more recently Linnaeus, because it's part of Mars, the big food group coming in as well, buying Irish vet practices. What's more is happening in there, Mark? What are the trends in terms of this outside investment coming into the sector?
Yeah, and there's a couple more actually along with the three that you have named. So Vet Partners are another corporate which are very active in the market at the moment. And there's also Highfield Veterinary Group, which is an Irish veterinary group which have been buying practices. So there has been five that I know of in the market who have bought practices. And really, I think they, from a vet's perspective, the real advantage of that is that vets can then focus on the clinical side of the business. So what the corporates do really is they look after the HR and they look after the property and they look after the leases and all of the business side of the practice. Because, again, if you have hundreds or many hundreds of veterinary practices, it's like you have that knowledge that you know exactly what to do and when to do it. And so that's the really hard thing of being a business owner and a sole trader or being on your own. You could be doing all the right things, but you don't know it because you're on your own. So they have that real advantage. And that's one of the real things that vets really like, and I think it's the reason why they're moving towards that model of selling their practices to corporates, because all of that business side is looked after and then they can focus on, rather than the business side, looking after the clinical side and looking after the clients and pets and animals.
Now, you've done, Mark, staying with you, a study, you've done that six times now, it's the sixth edition of a survey of vets, whether they're owners or senior executives in vet practices, and they're in Ireland here. And they say one thing that Pete mentioned, the succession aspect, they say that a lot of them are really in their 50s or more. That's a very strong age profile. And at the same time, the number of people they've identified locally to potentially take over after them is very small. Is that a big factor in selling to an outside investor?
Like it's a huge factor. And if you, on our survey this year, showed that 30% of vets surveyed are thinking about selling their practice in the next 12 months, where on the other side, there's only 2% of survey respondents aspired to owning a veterinary practice. So it's absolutely the reason. There are not the same level of successors. And even with the corporate model, as Pete alluded to, around succession, like companies are a great way to bring in new people. I mean, you can bring in growth shares, and there's lots of different things you can do rather than having to sell the practice in order to really bring young blood, young vets to take over. But the numbers are not there to do it. And that's a apart from the price that they pay, right? So, which is very different as well historically to what vets can raise in order to pay for the business. That's another big factor in it.
Pete, the survey also shows that overall it's a good job. Vets are reasonably well paid. They report really high satisfaction in doing this work with animals and their owners. But at the same time, there seems to be a lack of available candidates, whether it's for salaried work or to take over and become an entrepreneur in the sector. What's your own experience of that tension, like a good job, but very few candidates?
Well, there's a number of reasons for that, I think. One of which is the changing gender profile of the profession. So 50 years ago, 90% of vets would have been male, whereas now, if you look at the people who are qualifying, over 80% are female. That means that the profile has changed of the profession. So there'll be far more women qualifying as vets, And in general, on average, women are still more likely to decide to take a career break around the stage when they've been married and have had children, and then while the children have been reared, and then perhaps to come back to it part-time. So that's become a bit of a trend. And, I mean, it's not set in stone. Obviously, there are many women who don't do that. Indeed, there are some men who may decide to do that. But still, on average, the fact that a very high proportion of the profession is female, and that a high proportion of females compared to males will do that, means that there's a bit of a gap there from the point of view of the traditional model, where you'd have a young male vet qualifying, going into practice, working full-time, working 60 hours a week, 70 hours a week for 30, 40 years. And that's changed. And even amongst the even the males, indeed, I would say overall the whole bunch of new young vets, there's a bit of a trend towards not wanting, if you like, to sell their soul to the business. They would prefer to have a reasonable working life and a good work-life balance. And so there's a bit more of a push towards not wanting to do after hours, not wanting to work long days, even to work 3 or 4 days a week just as a routine, because it makes the work much more sustainable and much more enjoyable if you can do that. And the only downside of that from the business point of view is that it means if you're looking for somebody to take on the business, then you really, you know, it's harder to work with somebody who has those desires rather than somebody who wants to be wholly, fully committed to growing the business.
And does the corporate form you've established, kind of a formal limited company with several partners involved, is that helpful in kind of spreading out the load and rostering and all that? Does that make any difference at this point?
I don't think it really does. I mean, the previous partnership format was perfectly suitable for that. It's more looking to the future, I think, that although people may not want to still, you know, commit themselves as in what you might call over-the-top hard work, that doesn't mean they mightn't want to invest in buying a smaller tranche of the business, and indeed that's the sort of thing which may happen in the future. But as well as that, I think that I think the general trend for vets to be better organised as businesses is something which is part of this whole sort of shift. Vets would have human resources managers. They would engage consultants to help them with the more of the sort of aspects of business that would be normal in many other fields of work. But in veterinary, we tend to be a little bit more just doing what was in front of us that day rather than standing back and seeing the big picture.
Mark, what does this survey tell us about those aspects that are a bit new to vets? Recruitment, technology, HR management, how are they doing? How are they faring and feeling they're achieving in that area?
I think, like, the real thing that comes out on the HR side is that it's a real challenge to hire people. And in order to hire people, it's changed, as in that it's really important for vets and their businesses to build their own brand and what that brand for the practice really looks like, that it's attractive to vets. So it's around having that wider package that's attractive and need to follow, let's say, the corporate model, so to attract vets to independent practice. If I might pick up on a point that Pete mentioned around the incorporation and the change. You mentioned changing from a partnership to a company model, and from our side and advising of it, it's a really important element, because some vets do is they decide to incorporate, they form a limited company, and they just start trading out of that limited company the next day, forgetting about that it's a corporate transaction and you're selling something that you own to a company that's independent. Even though you may own the company, it's still a separate entity. So that can cause all sorts of issues, from how the company operates, and particularly then also if they're going to sell it. They're now selling goodwill and selling a business which there's no business purchase agreement in order to show that the business was ever sold into the company in the first place. So that's a real challenge. And the other challenge is around vets and our own operation of a business, because a lot of them may have had a partnership agreement, but they've never put in place a shareholders agreement. So all of a sudden, the law is totally different as to how what governs them. And if they don't have a shareholders agreement, they're reliant back on the Companies Act and the constitution of the company. So that's a, I think it's a really important element for, again, for vets or really for any professionals or anybody moving from an unincorporated to an incorporated business. It should be treated as if you're selling it to a third party.
Pete, hope you have all your ducks in a row, your shareholders agreement, everything.
We have very good advice from our accountants. That's kept us right, and that's been really, really important.
Okay. So there's something you mentioned there. Yeah, the brand aspect. And it's interesting that a lot of the vets that are, the practices that are moving into groups, whether they're merging between equals or being taken over by an outside investor, that tend to keep trading under their existing name. You know, they want their customers to know they're still the same team and maintain that confidence. But you say that they also, to recruit, they need a corporate brand, and you maybe candidates are more likely to look for a bigger employer that will have good benefits and HR policies. And is there a tension there between the two?
Yeah, and I'm not sure that it needs to be a bigger brand or it needs to be a larger brand. It's more around what's on offer. So it's around that out of hours cover that it's weekends off or it's not having to work every weekend. And it's around, I think it's about having a purpose and the business or the practice having a purpose that they can give that to their employees and their vets and their nurses and their wider staff in order to show where the business is going. And I think there's some really good independent vet practices who have done that as well. But I think in order to compete for people, it's a really important element to it.
Pete, the only college to qualify as vet at the moment is UCD, but there is a recommendation in the survey from a lot of respondents that there should be other opportunities for training, a second college. What do you think? Why is that an issue at the moment?
Well, it's an issue because for a number of years, the availability of spaces at UCD for Irish candidates has been very limited. And so many young Irish students have been going to European cities such as Budapest and Poland, where there are very good English language veterinary colleges. And so it's been a kind of anomaly that here we have in Ireland a very good educational system, but we're sending all our students away. So if you add that to the fact that there's a very significant shortage of new vets, so it's very hard to get vets to work for you, it makes perfect sense that you should set up another veterinary school in this country. And so that's been, I think it's quite an advanced stage of progress at the moment. And we're waiting for an announcement from the Minister of Education as to exactly where that will be, because there's some very, very strong candidates out there. And it's very exciting because if you look at the new veterinary schools in other countries like the UK, they're not just setting up new veterinary schools, but they're setting up new veterinary schools with entirely revolutionary ways of educating vets. So, you know, looking more at, instead of just looking at what's always been done and carry on doing the same, they're saying, okay, so you want a vet, what's the best way to create a vet? And so they're reviewing all the teaching processes. They seem to make it much more practical, much more thinking. I mean, these days you don't need to have all of the facts about an illness in your brain, because you can go to the internet and get all those facts straight away, but you have to know how to be able to make the diagnosis. So there's a whole different sort of aspect of what the skills that you need to be a vet has changed a lot. And so new veterinary schools have the opportunity to start from a complete white space and do things in the ideal way. And so that's kind of exciting.
There's something that struck me in the survey that HLB Ireland did, what was, when they were asking about the opportunities for vets in Ireland, there was generally a strong positive response that there is more business coming their way. I think on the agriculture side, we know there's a lot of animal health policies and a lot of prevention rather than cure being implemented at government level. But also on the pet side, one thing that struck me was the importance of insurance. And I didn't know that it's a bit like humans. Once you have health insurance, you have access to better medicine, and that creates, in turn, business for the healthcare industry. And it seems to be happening in vets as well. Mark, can you explain what you've heard about that?
Sure, yeah. And I think, and the survey showed that if you look towards the future, that it was 48% of respondents are positive about the future and positive about how to that growth in their practices, both large animal and small animal, which is really positive. And you're right, it's insurance, I think, gives vets then the opportunity on the clinical side, or at least gives those with insurance to decide what's best for their pet, irrespective of what the cost is. So I think that's the real difference that insurance brings to it, which is good for business as well, obviously. And you're not then trying to, I'm sure from a vet's perspective, trying to do the best clinical thing and not get paid, because historically that's what would have happened. And vets historically are not, and nobody that I've ever spoken to goes into veterinary in order to earn lots of money, right? It's not why you become a vet. So a lot of them end up in the situation where they provide the best clinical care, which is what they will always do, and not get paid. So insurance helps with that.
Pete, have you noticed business coming in through insurance? Is that significant for you?
Yes, it is. In Ireland, I reckon around 15% of pet owners are insured. And when a client tells us their pet is insured, we always breathe a sigh of relief. Not because it means that we're going to make lots of money out of them, because as Mark says, that's not why people become vets. The reason we breathe a sigh of relief is it means we can just do the best thing. All we need to do is to apply the gold standard to the animal's care, end of story, and we don't need to worry about anything else. Whereas if somebody hasn't got a pet that's insured, then we need to say to them, okay, well, these are the options. This is the gold standard, but it's expensive. So, you know, how much can you afford? And how far do you want to go? And so it's a much more complex negotiation if a pet isn't insured, because you have to build all those factors into it, as well as treating the animal. For that reason, vets would strongly recommend pet insurance, because it means that all the emotional aspects of trying to work out how much you want to spend on your pet, that's all gone. You're not going to be faced with somebody saying to you, you know, give us 3,000 euros or your pet's not going to survive. That's an awful situation for anybody to be in. I think it is important to say that people often are very unaware about about veterinary costs. What you're really talking about is most illnesses probably are sorted out for less than 1,000 euros. Exceptionally rarely, it might be 3,000 to 5,000 euros if your dog had a very serious illness or a badly broken bone or something like that. But that's about it. It's very different to the human world, where you can spend 20,000, 30,000, 40,000, 50,000 euros on medical care. Veterinary, it's rare for it to go over 5, let's say.
Yeah. Another thing alongside insurance which helps is pet plans. So this is a subscription model for the general treatment that's needed for pets. So things like the annual worming or visits to the vets, etc., is paid by way of subscription. So that, I find that that's a really good income generator for practices, because generally people don't come to the vet that often with their pets. So it is, there is profitability in it, even though vets can be a little bit afraid of it. And also from a pet perspective, then you can go to your vet without worrying you have to pay for it, because you've paid for it on that subscription.
I just want to go now full circle and come back to the issue we started with, which was incorporation and a potential sale to an investor of a practice. And maybe now that people have heard about it for the past half hour or so, if they think about doing it, what are the good practices to implement in those situations? And I'll stay with you, Mark, maybe for the advisor's point of view of that, like the key things to keep in mind.
Sure.
I'm in the end of my career, want to start a sale process, where to start and what to keep in mind.
Yeah, well, the number one issue that we find with selling businesses is where there's property involved. So it, usually a lot of times, and if you go back to vets, what they usually own the property that they operate from. And normally then a corporate, if they're buying it, will take a lease usually of 15 years over it. And what I've learned through the process is that somebody taking a lease, it's like doing a conveyance, it's like they're buying the property, because it's to go through the exact same due diligence. And there's lots of regulation around operating the property in which a veterinary practice operates from. So all of those, if there's any planning issues or any issues or that should all be sorted out first before you even think about selling. And in my experience, there's new things come up that you couldn't even dream that's wrong with property when you go to sell it. So that's the number one. And the second one is that if you have incorporated or if you're going to incorporate, make sure that you have all that corporate documentation in place, because that's the asset that you're selling. And that's the asset that's been bought. Thirdly, around tax, from a corporation tax perspective, vets are subject to what's called a close company surcharge because they're professionals. So really it brings the corporation tax rate for veterinary from 12.5% to 19% is the effective rate of tax. But in a lot of cases, that surcharge is missed. So the 12.5% is paid without the 7.5%. So it's to make sure that the corporation tax returns are being done correctly. And the last main thing I'd say is to take advice, because usually you're selling to a large corporate who have done hundreds of these deals. And it's much better to take advice in order to get the best value and in order to get the transaction done quickly.
And that value particularly, I mean, how do you value a vet practice and put a price on it?
It's done in many different ways, and it's referred back to a lot of the corporates as a multiple of turnover, But realistically, where it comes back to is the EBITDA, the free cash out of the business, and a multiple
just
of that.
Just like any business.
Just like any business, yeah. And that's what's attractive to veterinary, because even if you look at whether it's good times, okay, there will be increases in revenue, but in bad times, it might take a dip of 10 or 15%, but veterinary business is not going to fall off the page. So that free cash and the continuance of it, I think, is a real positive for people buying veterinary practices.
Pete, in your experience forming this limited company, what have been the things you're really happy you did and things you might have missed and you wish you'd done differently?
I suppose what you'd like to have done differently is planned it better further in advance. And it's always easy to say that afterwards, yes. Because otherwise, as time goes along, you realise that possibly you could have done a bit better a different way, because you did it in a bit too much at the time, rather than thinking about it even 5-10 years beforehand. So, but it's all about being organised as a business, I think. And again, it comes back to the job of a vet, which is a very much a hands-on job. Like when I go to work, there's usually somebody waiting there with their pet, and then there's another person there, and you're kept busy all day seeing animals. And so it's quite difficult to fit in the more structured business side of life. It's difficult to put time aside to do that. So as a vet, that's an ongoing challenge, is to apply enough sort of logical, objective business logic to what you do, rather than, it's just hard to find time for that sometimes.
And without revealing any boardroom secrets, but how do you envisage the future of Bravet when you start to prepare your own retirement now?
Well, that's something which we need to talk to people around us about. We need to talk to our accountants and people we meet generally, and we need to. I've said to you that I'd like to have planned things further in advance before. Well, the same thing applies. You know, we're looking at the different options right now.
Okay, and good luck with that. And thanks very much to you both, Pete and Mark. And we'll have more about this survey and a link to it on the website on thecurrency.news. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Currency.news podcast. It pays to be curious.